else water people drink is dehydrating them. Not only does reverse osmosis and distilled water eventually over time leach minerals from your body, thus dehydrating you, because the mineral composition is one of the main determining factors of hydration, but also things like fluoride and chlorine dehydrate you over time. If you're drinking tap water, what my family is drinking, it's going to become their blood within 5 minutes. I want them to have the highest quality, most living, vivacious blood that's going to help them to be present and conscious and vivacious. A lot of spring water has actually been under the earth since before the Industrial Revolution. This water is the most pristine thing we will ever come into contact with. She's been gestating in the womb of our mother for hundreds and sometimes thousands of years. We tend to think of hydration as just how much water you drink, but that's just irrigation. And you can irrigate all day long, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're actually hydrating. It doesn't mean that your body's actually absorbing that water. Countless different indigenous cultures all throughout the world, they have practices of offering, of gifting. In Bali, where they have a beautiful entire water religion called Agama Tirtha, the holy water religion, they give Tirtha Chanang Sari every day. So every single day they leave an offering by every body of water.
Isabel Friend is back on the Vital Veda podcast. She has a borderline obsessive fascination with water. She teaches full-time about water and facilitates ceremonies and retreats all around the world about water. She's a public speaker, certified nutritionist, mystic dance and integral yoga teacher, and Reiki master. She's trained in aromatherapy, herbalism. She's definitely a nerd and very passionate about bringing modern scientific understanding with ancient wisdom. And she is water. And we'll go into that. She is not only water, but she is like a water goddess. She is like the personification of the mother divine aspect of the water element on earth. So Isabel, it's been a long time coming. Welcome back to the Vital Veda show.
Thanks so much for having me on, Dylan. I appreciate being here with you.
Before we go into things, and before we explain what do you mean the fact that you are water, since you've been on the show, you haven't been asked this question, which is the new question we ask every guest. What did you do this morning, or what did you do today? What is your morning routine?
Ah, okay. That's a great question. Well, this morning I woke up around 6:30, and I'm really fortunate here where I live because my bed faces to the east. So I opened up the windows and I did some sun gazing for sunrise, which is my favorite thing to do, and I managed to get up at 6:30, and then I went out on the terrace, and I have this new amazing product that I'm in love with that is called the Quantum Block by Lila Quantum. Not only does it structure and energize water, but it also really just helps to put you in a very brainwave synced state. So I used that during my meditation, watching the sunrise, and yeah, it was a really sweet morning. And then awesome. I drank some super highly charged water, of course.
Yeah,
I was charging it in the carbon gene overnight. I have a couple of carbon genes here, actually. One that has blue diamonds in it, another one that's full of gold and ormus. And so I charged up the water and drank that. And it was a
what's
very
a carbon
energizing
gene?
Way to start the day. A carbon gene is a water structuring and energizing device from Natural Action. They have these incredible custom-made devices. So based on your own unique kinesiological readings, they'll create these water chargers where I think it's just about a couple of shot glasses worth of water that charges in the device, but it charges all night long in the fridge with North and South Pole magnets and creates a really balanced and beautiful water.
Mm-hmm. And the diamonds and stones or whatever's specific for you, do they just sit in the water or in the vessel?
They sit in the vessel, yeah. They're inside of the walls of the vessel.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Mm-hmm. So I think before we get into today's topic and speak more about water, which of course we can speak so much about, I think it'd be good to have some context of why it is important for people to know about water and at least understand some of the complexities about water. Because as we explored in the last episode, which was episode number 42, The Magic, Mystery, and Science of Water, which By the way, it was very popular. Thanks so much. Like, guests love that. It was one of the favorites, and they loved you. And we spoke about, you know, how actually water's not simple like we think it is. It's extremely complex. There's so many scientific anomalies. We go into those. But just again to reiterate, like, why is it important for us to learn about this? And because, as I said earlier, we are water. So perhaps we can paint that picture.
Yeah, that's a beautiful place to start, because there are so many misconceptions about water. And I think the primary misconception is that we tend to think of it as this inert, inanimate commodity, something to use, something to buy and sell, something that is, you know, we just drink just to keep us alive, just the same way that we put fuel in a car so it can run. But in reality, water is the vessel of consciousness, right? Water is the physical body of life itself. When life itself wants to incarnate in the 3D world, it takes the body of water in order to do so. And the more we treat water as an inanimate object, not only can it not hydrate us, but it also begins to disappear from the planet. So really, in restoring right relationship with water, we have to decolonize our idea of water and start to establish a reciprocal communion and in a reciprocal relationship with water. Again, as an inanimate object, we think of it in terms of quantity, like how much crap is in the water and can I just get a filter to take the crap out of the water? And then if it's quote unquote clean, it must be good. Whereas that couldn't be farther from the truth. And most people are drinking water that is actively dehydrating them because that's the way they're treating it. Whereas when we start to see that it's not a matter of quantity, how much stuff, how many toxins are in the water, but rather of quality, how living, how vivacious is the water, then we can look at it in terms of, well, if water is a living being, what are her needs? And because water is the body of life, that body can be healthy or sick, that body can be alive or dead, just like our bodies. And it actually has very similar needs to our bodies as well. So just like we need to breathe, water also needs to breathe. She needs to exchange gases like oxygen and carbonic acid. Just like we need to move, we can't sit still and stagnant all the time. In fact, recent studies have shown that sitting still and stagnant is actually a greater risk factor for all-cause mortality, even than smoking. The more you sit, it's actually more dangerous than smoking. And the same is true with water. The more she is stagnant and bottled up and penned up and quarantined in bottles and reservoirs and that sort of thing, she just loses her vivacity. So she needs to breathe. She needs to move. She needs to eat just like we do. We need to eat of the earth element of food that's grown in the soil. Water also needs to eat. She needs to absorb the earth element through minerals and electrolytes. And when she's been robbed of these minerals and electrolytes, like many filters do, she becomes hungry. She becomes an aggressive solvent, and she can actually leach these minerals from her body, our bodies, because she's just trying to fill herself back up again. So she needs to breathe. She needs to eat. She needs to move. She needs to have quality relationships, just like we need to have quality relationships, right? I believe it was the Surgeon General of the United States that just published a book within the past few years saying that isolation is one of the biggest risk factors for disease, and that human relationships are actually a nutrient. They're a nutrient that we need to keep us healthy. And it's the same with water. Molecular bonding and molecular relationships are part of what give water its vivacity and its vitality. But most people are drinking water where there's no molecular bonding. The molecules are just bouncing around. Hydrogen bonds are forming and breaking apart a billion times per second. They can't snuggle up to form families and communities and cultures. And so there's this isolation in the water. And all of this just boils down to the fact that what we do to water, we do to ourselves. Because we are made of water, what happens to water, both individually and collectively, really becomes our destiny.
It's so many things in that. One, I just want to say, which was a huge thing for me when I did your course. What was it? The Living Bodies of Water? What was the online course that
which
I did?
One? Internal Oceans. So many courses. Yeah, Sorry. Internal Oceans. Yeah.
Yeah. So That was, I just love when you were saying like what needs to breathe, what needs to move, like, and I just thought of pipes, like how there's hardly any air. And the big thing was the movement. Like that was so huge for me. And we're going to speak about hydration and how to properly hydrate, which is more at a physical level. But actually, before we get into that, you touched on something really interesting. And that was when you were talking about the reciprocal relationship with water, I had this thought about, it was a very, like, you can say, superficial relative thought. I'm not thinking deeply about it, but it's the first thing that came to my mind. And it was sewage. It was, if I'm going to consume water, because so many of us have this consumer mentality of consume, mm-hmm. Oh, I want the best water. I'm just going to get the best spring water and re-energize it. And of course, it's not just about consuming you. How else are you going to contribute to the waters? There's so many ways. We could do environmental work. We could do town planning. We could navigate. But one thing I do, for example, when I'm foraging, because I forage quite a bit and I eat really good food, it's fresh, but I like to eliminate my bowels, defecate in the bush, because I'm like giving back those beautiful seeds and those really good quality. It's not like I eat crap. Same with, like, sometimes when I urinate, if I have citrus trees on the property, like I'll do it. Like, and I joke to my friends, like, yeah, please urinate. It's great for citrus, the acid, as long as you don't drink alcohol or whatever. You know, you haven't eaten crap the night before. So I love you to comment on that, the idea of reciprocal relationship, because yes, we're becoming more conscious, knowing how to drink the best water, but of course there's so much we can start doing, action, environmental action and all this, but how can we kind of begin to give on an individual level?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought this up, because that's an aspect of hydration that most people overlook and they don't even consider it to be a part of hydration. But I actually include it in my core steps of hydration. So if anyone has taken my Navigating the Waters e-course, after the last podcast we did, then you'll know that my steps for remediating and bringing water back to life again, if you're working with tap water or reverse osmosis or something like this, is filter, structure, balance, bless, free, and then your lifestyle steps. And so that fifth step of freeing the water has a lot to do with this reciprocity. It has a lot to do with the fact that water in nature is the greatest teacher of generosity, of abundance, of non-hierarchical leadership, of decentralized prosperity within an ecosystem. And so when we mirror those properties of water and we start to be generous with water, we start to give back to water, and we start to share water generously and freely, because water was never meant to be something that's commoditized. It's never meant to be something that we pay for, right? If we pay a corporation for bottled water, we're literally paying that corporation for our bloodstream. If we pay the municipal government for our tap water, we're literally paying the government for our bloodstream. So part of this freedom comes from receiving water that is generously born from the earth, and then also giving water back, sharing it with our community. You know, if you live in a place where it takes you 30 minutes to drive to your nearest spring, sharing that water abundantly, becoming a water carrier for your clan, for your community. And then also in countless different indigenous cultures all throughout the world, they have practices of offering, of gifting. You know, in the Peruvian and Andean cultures, they call it despacho. In Bali, where they have a beautiful entire water religion called Agama Tirtha, the holy water religion, they give Tirtha Chanang Sari every day. So every single day they leave an offering by every body of water, whether it's a pool or just a jug of water on their countertop, and certainly on every bridge that goes over every creek and every stream, even little gullies of runoff where people, you know, wash their clothes, and just every body of water is generously gifted to every day, little baskets of flower petals and incense. And the Kogi of Colombia as well, they call it pagamento. So in their view, it's basically the rent that we pay to drive these bodies of water for one lifetime, because really, you know, we're 70% water volumetrically, but molecularly, we're 99.9% water molecules. So we're just borrowing this water from the watershed. We borrow it for 100 years, more or less, and then it goes right back to the watershed again. So this water that is within us is intricately woven into the weft of the watershed that we live in. We tend to live very disconnected lives where we forget that we're really a part of this watershed. But by giving pagamento, by paying that rent, by giving thanks, by giving offerings, we remind ourselves on a daily basis, or at least a lunar basis. I would recommend for people to take on this practice, at least on the full moons or the new moons, to take this on and really give thanks for the water that we're made of, because there is absolutely nothing that takes place in your body or in nature without water. And as we forget to give thanks and to honor that, water gradually rescinds from their relationship. We have a very abusive relationship with water right now, right? We treat it worse than we would treat any living being. She is the body of life itself, and yet we treat her worse than we would treat any living being. We shit in water and piss and use her as a carrier for chemical weapons and pesticides and herbicides and fungicides and rodenticides and chemical warfare and all of these different things. It would be inconceivable to treat any living being in that way. And yet that's the way that we treat water. And so drought is increasing, desertification is increasing, because if you're in an abusive relationship, you should leave, bar none, right? And yet when we start to restore that reciprocity, a part of that is giving thanks and giving offerings. A part of that is sharing water freely and divorcing water from the capitalistic system of supply and demand. You know, the whole huge, huge part of the reason why drought and desertification is happening is because, according to the law of supply and demand, if there's one thing that every single person in the world needs every day to survive, that is the most valuable thing in the world, especially if its supply is limited. So the more privatization happens, the more drought increases, the more valuable private water assets become for these global water cartels. But another part of it is also restoring communion, like we were saying before. What is the relationship? And really, relationships are about communication, reciprocal communication, not just talking at your water. You know, a lot of people, since the popularity of Dr. Masaru Emoto's work, they want to say the word love to their water. Water, I love you, I thank you, I respect you. And that's beautiful. That's a great practice. I also recommend listening to your water. And there are a lot of different ways to do that. There are a lot of water divination practices, which is also called hydromancy. And these have been practiced cross-culturally throughout the eons. You can find various kinds of hydromancy practices in pretty much every ancient indigenous culture. Like the Kogi that we just spoke about, for example, they drop beads in a gourd full of water, and then they read the way that the bubbles come up from those beads, and that gives them answers to every question that they have about life and the universe and everything from the mundane to the deeply esoteric. In the Celtic tradition, they had a lot of different ways. One was, you know, dropping a person's piece of clothing on the water, and then based on whether it floated or sank and how it floated or sank, they were able to read quite a lot from that about the person and get their questions answered in that way. Nostradamus, we're all familiar with Nostradamus. He received all of his predictions about the 20th century, which were all pretty much astoundingly accurate, he received them by scrying into a bowl full of water. Also, the oracle at Delphi, she received all of her oraculous visions by breathing in the vapors of the Cocytus spring. So there are a lot of ways that we can interact with water in a conversation where we actually learn from her. Because with every good communication, there's a balance, right? So there's a balance between speaking and sharing, and then you listen to the other person and you reflect what you've heard, right? You say, okay, I understand you. Is this what you said? And we see that reflection all the time in the work of Dr. Masaru Emoto, for example, where you see that water is exposed to a certain influence and then reflects something back. water's interpretation of that influence. You also see it in the work of Veda Austin, who will expose water to a certain photograph or a word or a thought or even her dreams as she's sleeping. And then water's crystallography will reflect that back in the petri dish. But then there's also this element in any good communication of bringing something new to the conversation, of this new, fresh perspective. And listening to water's perspective, we can learn so much about all of humanity's toughest questions, our toughest crises, our toughest conundrums. And not only the water divination methods that I've mentioned, but also I recommend people look into, again, Veda Austin's work, because she's been creating, or rather listening and perceiving and discovering, this method of communication that water creates, which she calls hydroglyphs. And there are ways that water brings through these very unique messages. And it's something that everyone can do right at home. If you have a freezer and you can buy a petri dish, then you can do this method. You don't have to have, you know, advanced electron force microscopes like in Emoto's lab. Everyone can do it at home, and you can really start to cultivate this reciprocity that you were just talking about.
So beautiful. So, of course, we are water. We are part of we are the earth, etc. So enhancing this and attention to this will optimize the health and wellness of everyone and the planet and each human, and not only physical health, but mental health, spiritual health. It's all connected. It's such a fundamental aspect in the Vedas. It's one of the five elements. Okay, air, space, fire, water, earth. So it's so important, so fundamental. So I want to come now back a bit more into the body and the human body, and go back to the point which I was thinking of, which was the movement aspect of water. Because I knew this, but when I did your course, it just, you were talking about movement and like we should be moving wild like water, like wild goes through these rocks and streams and vortexes. We don't want it to be going in 90 degrees pipes. And then we look at the human who like might be running on a slab of concrete straight, or upstairs or downstairs, or sitting 90 degrees at a desk. And then after that course, I was just like, you know, I live near the beach. I was just running and moving my hands in all wild and irrational directions and just jumping around and getting that deeper hydration through moving your body. And I remember once you did a post on Instagram. It was like a photo of someone at a desk and with a coffee, and you were like, name five things or something that was dehydrating in this photo. And I saw, I'm like, I couldn't get the fifth one. I was like, oh yeah, the coffee's dehydrating, the blue light's dehydrating, the non-native electromagnetic fields are dehydrating. But then the other one, which was staying still. So this is a huge one, and it just gives that beautiful vibrancy. So tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, hydration is really one of the most, movement is one of the really most important factors of hydration. We tend to think of hydration as just how much water you drink, but that's just irrigation. And you can irrigate all day long, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're actually hydrating. It doesn't mean that your body's actually absorbing that water. And we've all had that experience, right? Where we get thirsty, so we drink a lot of water, but then we just pee it all out. And it's like, well, how come I don't feel better then? How come I don't feel more energized and more peaceful like I should when I'm well hydrated? And it's because there are a lot more factors to hydration than just drinking water. And movement is one of the biggest one of those. And that's because we have all of these hydraulic networks in our body. Hydraulic literally means movement by water or action by water. And for example, our circulatory system has a pump, and that's our heart. Well, technically the heart is not a pump. Actually, the heart is a vortex, and it only moves water through our circulatory system because it creates these spirals that give this vortexing impulse to the body water, to the blood, which moves it into the veins. And then the veins have spiral striations on the inside of them, which allow water to move more freely, because water doesn't like to flow in a straight line. Never in nature does it flow in a straight line. Even when it seems to be flowing in a straight line, like in a river, there's always meandering. And if you were to take a cross section of the river, it's not flowing in a linear way. It's actually spiraling through the river. And every time the the meandering stream switches direction, the spiral also switches direction. So water is always moving in these various multidimensional ways. But then we have other systems in our bodies that don't have a pump, like a quote unquote pump, or a vortex like the heart. Like, for example, our fascia and our lymphatic fluid. So our lymph is actually one of the biggest oceans in our body. It's one of the biggest hydrological systems that we have within us. In fact, you have 3 times more lymphatic fluid than you have blood in your body. Way more lymphatic fluid. And it's basically like your body's sewage system. And it only moves when you move. You have lymph nodes basically right around every single joint in your body, because nature is enormously intelligent, right? And it knows that your joints are going to be moving more than anything else in your body. So if lymph needs movement to flow, let's put the lymph nodes right in the joints. It wasn't intending for us to be as stagnant and sedentary and at 90 degrees like we are nowadays in the modern world. And so what happens is most people's lymphatic fluid ends up stagnating. And when you get stagnant fluid, it's just like sitting around in your own sewage, your own internal sewage. And it's a major cause of acidification in the body and of inflammation in the body. Now, there are a lot of really intelligent nutritionists and dietitians and healthcare providers who will say, well, all disease can be traced back to acidification and inflammation in the body. And I'm here to tell you, acidification and inflammation can both be traced back directly to dehydration. Dehydration is truly the root of all disease, and that's been shown in countless different ways. But when you don't have a proper flow of water through your body and the waters can't transition in the right ways between the various hydrological systems of the body, between the lymphatic fluid and the blood, for example, that's not hydration. It doesn't matter how much water you're drinking, that's not hydration. So we have to move. We have to move to get our lymph moving and to detoxify. And then the other major hydraulic network of the body is the fascia.
But before you go into the fascia, I just want to add, like, you spoke so much Ayurveda there. Like, lymph is the first tissue. It's called rasa in Ayurveda, which means like the essence of the body, the juices of the body. And it's like the first tissue that we treat, and it's the first tissue to get vitiated. And then from lymph, it transforms into blood. As you said, the blood is the second tissue. So lymph is like a key. And
that's so interesting. And it's so important. And isn't it incredible how often it's overlooked in allopathic medicine? I didn't realize that it's the first thing that's treated in Ayurveda, but it makes perfect sense, right? Because it's the biggest ocean in our body. And also, pretty much all chronic pain can be traced back to lymphatic stagnation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Lymph and plasma. And yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's the fascia as well. Back in the early 2000s, they were able to take the very first video ever recorded of living fascia inside a person's living body, right? Before that, our only understanding of fascia was just as this kind of like dry, spider webby kind of material that you would take apart in cadavers, you know, or for anyone who eats meat, you know, when you're preparing your chicken or you're preparing your beef and you rip apart the muscle, you'll see this fibrous tissue. Well, that's the fascia. But in a living body, it's completely different. They sent these minuscule microscopic little cameras in there, and it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, because what they discovered in doing that is that the fascia is actually this living web of it's a hydrating system. It's basically like your body's irrigation network. And it's, I think, about 80% protein and 20, no, I'm sorry, that's backwards. It's about 80% water and 20% protein, different kinds of proteins like collagen, et cetera, but around 80% water. And you can see that when you look at it, because it's this beautiful, clear, crystalline, very wet, gel-like kind of webbing. And it's highly, highly, highly structured water when it's healthy. And in the footage that they took, you can actually see the little droplets of water sliding across these web-like fibers of gelatinous protein, of watery, structured watery protein. You can see that the fascia is actually delivering little drops of water to every cell in your body. You know, the fascia is connected to absolutely every single cell, and its primary function is to irrigate them. And what's interesting is that when people have emotional traumas, you can actually start to develop dry fascia in certain areas. Of course, when you have physical traumas, you can also start to develop dry fascia in those areas. And then the fascia loses its structure, it loses its hydration, and it starts to become more kind of condensed and tangled. And so this is one of the biggest ways, not the only way, but one of the biggest ways that actually our emotional state and our hydration are very closely linked. Because if we're not very well hydrated, our fascia is likely to become a lot more dry and tangled, and we're likely to store a lot more emotional traumas than we would store if we were juicy and hydrated and, you know, flowing in our irrigation networks like that. And again, movement, just coming back to the movement thing, it's that fascia really is able to irrigate when we move, when we stretch, when we twist, when we turn. And if we're sitting still and stagnant all the time, then the fascia can't do that.
Yeah. And like, we are currently in absolute epidemic of dehydration. Mm-hmm. And you said something related earlier, but also in Ayurveda, like the cause of degeneration of and catabolism of the body, which is essentially degeneration and about to perish, is dryness or dehydration. And as we get particularly around the menopause time or around 60, the human enters that stage of life where we call vata, and it is that greater dryness, and we see the dehydration much greater amounts. Like you see elderly, like I can feel it in the pulse when I see my patients, like the elderly, they are so much more prone to that dryness, and those mm-hmm. with the chronic diseases. But it's even in so many people now, like dryness of the spine, dryness of the joints, dryness of the bowels, dryness of the eyes, mm-hmm. like so many aspects. And you're talking about this fascia, which is, I love that irrigation, that close irrigation. You know, like when you do a garden with a lot of care and you're putting beautiful irrigation at every single plant and like really putting your attention to those plants. It's like, that's like the fascia. It's like holding space and giving that foundation for every organ, every muscle group, particularly mm-hmm. as it's connective tissue and ligament and joint. So yeah, but this dehydration is a big thing.
Absolutely. It's really the root of all disease. Mm. It's really the root of all aging. There was, you know, Dr. Ishihara Yumi said that aging is really just a factor of the body drying out. And it seems like an overly simplistic analogy to say, well, look at the difference between a prune and a plum, right? A plum gets all wrinkly, or rather a prune gets all wrinkly like we do in old age, whereas a plum is nice and ripe and juicy and plump like we are when we're younger. And that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but it actually happens exactly the same way in our bodies as well. In fact, there was a doctor named Dr. Alexis Carroll who showed that the cell can actually live pretty much indefinitely. It's just the fluid surrounding the cell that degenerates. And so by design, we are meant to live very long, healthy, thriving lives when we honor our aquatic bodies, when we honor the fact that these are basically aquarian terrains that we're driving around, right? In fact, Dr. Zach Bush, he's one of my favorite voices in the medical sphere these days. He's a triple board certified physician. And he says that we're living in a desert without even realizing it. And that's because our lifestyles are constantly dehydrating us. Pretty much everything people do, not only sitting still all day, but being around electromagnetic fields, the stress and anxiety of modern life is dehydrating us. Being separated from the earth, not having grounding and earthing influences, is dehydrating us, not putting our feet on the soil. Even the food that we eat, the standard American diet, is highly dehydrating. It's very processed. It doesn't have the structured water that living plant foods do, not just living plant foods, but all, you know, fruits and vegetables, because it is bio water, it's living water, it's structured water. And so our natural diets are meant to be very hydrating. Even natural animal foods are really high in the healthy fats that allow us to create really well-buffered cell membranes. And your cell membrane health is the number one determining factor of your ability to absorb and retain hydration. I mean, pretty much everything in the modern, the amount of coffee and tea and alcohol that people drink, it's all dehydrating us. So even if people are drinking 8 glasses a day, which is far more than most people drink, a lot of people don't drink water at all. It astounds me. Or if they do, it's just a few glasses a day. But if you're really on it, you are really a health nut and you're going to drink 8 full glasses a day. Well, I'm sorry, but that might be enough just to compensate for the amount of dehydration that's happening from the rest of your lifestyle, not to say anything of, you know, going beyond baseline. And again, not to mention the fact that most water people drink is dehydrating them. Not only does reverse osmosis and distilled water actually eventually over time leach minerals from your body, thus dehydrating you, because the mineral composition is one of the main determining factors of hydration. But also, you know, of course, the things like fluoride and chlorine dehydrate you over time if you're drinking tap water. And so there are really so many different factors here, and people don't really recognize necessarily that drinking water doesn't necessarily hydrate you, and that even if you do drink water, there's a big difference between the water that dehydrates you and the water that just satisfies thirst and the water that actively imparts life. Those are three very different waters. And if you're really on it and you're really into health and wellness, you might be drinking water that will satisfy your thirst rather than dehydrate you. But there are very few people who are drinking water that actively imparts life. And that's why we're living in a desert right now. And that's why this aging process, this drying out process is so ubiquitous. The most conservative estimates, most conservative say that human beings on the planet right now, 75% of us are dehydrated. Whereas if you look at the physicians who are actually studying hydration on a daily basis, they say the number is more like 100%. They don't see a single person who comes into their office who's not dehydrated, regardless of whether or not they have any kind of symptoms to begin with when they come in. They almost always have a phase angle of about like 7 or below. Phase angle is one of the measures that we use for hydration. So pretty much everyone is dehydrated. And we'd really have to, again, just switch our understanding of what is hydration in order to fix it.
We're going to get into that. But I want to explore more about how water can dehydrate you. You mentioned the leaching of minerals, but I want to, it's similar to oils. So when you, I see a lot of, and even when my teacher was touring Australia, he'd feel the pulse of hundreds of patients and I would be there. And he was saying, actually, I think why these people are so dry, one of the reasons is they're eating these rancid vegetable oils and they actually drying the system out. And other than the, you know, true saturated fats and other oils. So because they just bleach deodorize these vegetable oils and seed oils, and that's like giving this roughness to the tissues and kind of scrubbing it in an incompatible way. So yeah, how is the, if someone's drinking, whether it's tap water or maybe even a type of filtered water, I don't know, how can people be dehydrating themselves by drinking water?
Well, before I answer that, I just want to echo what you said about the fats and the oils. That is so important. It's really, really drying people out. You know, people are making themselves of oils that are not found in nature. People are making themselves of oils that human beings have never been made of in the entire history of humanity. And if you look at your cell membranes, it's basically like a sandwich of various lipid layers, right? Various fatty layers. And if you're making yourself of these rancid seed oils and vegetable oils, then your cell membranes simply are not going to function properly. Well, what is the function of a cell membrane? And of course, there are a lot of different functions, especially if you look into Dr. Bruce Lipton's work. You'll see that actually it's the cell membrane that is the brain of the cell. We used to think that it's the nucleus that's the brain of the cell, but you can take the nucleus out of a cell and it's going to function just fine as long as it has a healthy and intact cell membrane. because that's the way that it interfaces with its aquatic environment. And so a cell membrane is mostly what's responsible for maintaining the cell voltage. And cell voltage is the determining factor of overall cell health, right? When we look at somebody who is dehydrated, they have a phase angle of around, you know, 7 or 6 or below. And phase angle is how much voltage that cell membrane can capacitate. And so the more electricity the membrane can bring across it, that's directly proportional to how much water the cell membrane can bring across it through the osmotic flow of nourishing water into the cell and detoxifying water out of the cell. And so basically your electrical capacity, your prana, your mana, your chi, your energy in general is directly proportional to your level of hydration. We use the same measurement for both, for your electrical capacity and your hydration. They are synonymous. What else does the cell membrane do? It also helps with ATP synthase. We've all heard, you know, we remember from like Miss Frizzle back in the day. I don't know if they had Miss Frizzle in Australia, but it was like the thing in the 90s in the States. And, you know, she would go on these field trips into people's bodies and look at their cells. And ATP, of course, is like the energy of the cell, right? Well, there's a lot of new discoveries coming out around the function of ATP and the fact that its primary role is actually structuring the intracellular fluid. And it's the structure of that fluid that allows the cell to maintain a high energy, to maintain a high voltage. Because when the water loses its structure, you lose that electrical capacity as well. But in the ATP synthase, or how that ATP is made, a lot of it happens in the cell membranes, where you have basically these turbines. They're kind of like wind turbines, and they're constantly spinning. And the wind that powers them is the hydrogen from water, right? And so what happens when you have cell membranes that are made out of really poor quality fats is that these turbines just don't spin quite right. And then in addition to that, you also have people drinking very deuterium-rich water. Deuterium is an isotope of hydrogen that has an extra neutron, so that makes it very, very heavy, heavy hydrogen. That's why we call deuterium-rich water heavy water. And if you're drinking heavy water, it's just too big and gluggy and viscous and thick to make it through those ATP synthase turbines that are on the cell membranes. So, yeah. Fats are a huge component of hydration for sure, for the electrical voltage and for the osmotic flow and for the ATP synthase and all of the above. So, oh, and because another one of the ways that we hydrate ourselves is through metabolic water. Not many people are aware that your body actually produces endogenous water inside of your cells. You have springs, you have fresh water springs. You're not only just hydrating with the water that you drink, but your body is endogenously producing water. And what's cool about metabolic water is it's deuterium depleted. So that heavy isotope of hydrogen we just talked about, it's not found in metabolic water. The water that your cells produce is light, it is fresh, it is protium hydrogen only. And your body's ability to do that depends a lot on the amount of and the quality of fat that you're eating. Maybe don't quote me on this, but I'm 98% sure for every gram of fat that your body eats, your high quality fat, your cells produce 110 grams of metabolic water. Whereas for every 100 grams of carbohydrates that you eat, your body only produces about 80 or 90 grams of metabolic water. So the fats really support your body's endogenous hydration as well.
Is there any other ways that we can support endogenous hydration? I'm just thinking of yogis mm-hmm. who don't eat or drink for decades, and I've met 2 or 3 of them, and that's great. Like that's another would make another sense that how they can manage that. Is they're endogenously producing water? Can they be doing that maybe by the air, through the prana, through sunlight?
Absolutely. So there's actually a few different ways that your body produces water endogenously. And what's cool is if you talk to people who have done really long dry fasts at some point in the dry fast, you get to the point where you feel like you're going to die. You are so dehydrated and you're so hungry and you feel like you're knocking on death's door. And then you hit this turning point. You flip this switch. I've spoken to so many people who have done dry fasts and they get to this point where then they feel these springs inside start to erupt. And dry fasting, if it's done well, if it's done properly, I'm not recommending anyone do this without, you know, supervision. It can be dangerous. But you do get to a point where your body starts kicking in and producing even more metabolic water. In fact, there are some people in the deuterium depleted water sphere who recommend drinking less liquid water just to support your body to produce more metabolic water. I don't necessarily take that approach to things. I think there are other better ways of supporting your body's ability to produce more metabolic water, but I would imagine that's what's happening with these yogis, is that they've trained their bodies to really produce a lot of metabolic water through other practices, through, like you were saying, pranayama or sun gazing or meditation. Besides metabolic water, another way that your body produces endogenous water, and there's almost nobody talking about this, like this is really cutting edge kind of fringe discovery. Dr. Tom Cowan talks a bit about it. I recommend looking up some of his podcasts for anyone who wants to learn more about it. But also, your DNA can produce water from scratch out of nothing. Well, your DNA is basically a fractal antenna to the cosmos. In addition, your DNA is also held in its chiral structure by the most highly structured icosahedral chelathrate water molecules in your entire body. So we were talking about aging earlier and aging being a factor of drying out. It's also majorly a factor of losing the structure of these chains of water molecules that exist as the spine, as the backbone of the double helix spiral of your DNA. If you look at the DNA of older people, the structure of the water inside their DNA has massively relaxed as compared to younger people. And then of course that leads to telomeres fraying, et cetera, et cetera. So Dr. Tom Cowan says that your DNA can also produce brand new de novo endogenous water as well. And I would imagine if these yogis are connecting into the infinite source all the time through their practices, then probably they have a lot more DNA water that's being generated as well, which I think is particularly interesting if you look at like some of the more esoteric spiritual teachings and a lot of different religious practices and mysticism teachings. You know, for example, Jesus always spoke about, you know, I am the fountain of living waters, connect to me or connect to Christ consciousness, in other words, and you will experience the fountain of never-ending eternal living waters. And there are a lot of, there are so many hidden veiled water allegories and so much water symbolism in these holy books. But the more we discover about the nature of water, and the more we just see these echoed and affirmed over and over again. Like, for example, I'm sure you've heard of the yogis who are able to pass through solid walls, or they're able to have these incredible siddhis or powers of bilocation or trilocation, where they can manifest in multiple places at the same time. Maybe they have devotees who are all the way across the world, and those devotees all see a mirage of him at the same moment, and just all these incredible powers that are spoken of in the texts. Well, as it turns out, in certain states, like for example in the quantum tunneling state, water has all of these incredible capacities. So the Oak Ridge National Laboratory did studies on the quantum tunneling phase of water, and they found that a single water molecule is able to occupy multiple locations in space. It can bilocate, it can even sextilocate, it can occupy six locations in space all at the same time. And a single water molecule can even pass through solid walls. In every single way, water defies the known laws of physics. There are 64 anomalies about water that science can't explain that have nothing to do with the quantum tunneling state. It doesn't even include the quantum state and all of these other anomalies that are more recently discovered. So I think that if these yogis are tapping into the empowerment of what it really means to be a body of water, living on a body of water, then they're tapping into pure, infinite life source energy, which is limitless. It's really limitless.
And I'm sure there's other elements involved as well, like other anomalies and other, you know, when these siddhis, these divine human capabilities, supernatural capabilities are occurring, I'm sure there's other elemental aspects which have these unique properties.
Yeah.
So there's more I want to speak about, but I want to kind of get into, well, before we get into ways to enhance water, just, oh, there's so many. That's why Isabel's written courses on them, and there's so many different levels, which is what I love. It's like you can do stuff DIY, you can do it cheaply, you can get awesome equipment, you can do so many things. A couple things I want to talk about, just again to emphasize the importance of water. I want to just talk about a water and immunity, because it's a big topic now, particularly with pandemics and things. So yeah, how one aspect we can support our immunity, many people want to do it, is proper hydration.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, water is the foundation of immunity. There's nothing that the body does that doesn't involve water metabolism in some way. And all of our immune functions are absolutely a part of that. And our immune functions are all incredibly inhibited when we are dehydrated. I have, I think, 4 or 5 videos on my YouTube channel. I had about 11 lined up to do, because there are at least 11 ways that water supports our immunity. But this was back during the beginning of the pandemic, and I was like, cool, let me help people with hydration. And then all of the censorship started, and I was like, let me phrase things differently. But you can still find those 4 videos on, you know, deuterium depleted water and Kenton marine plasma and molecular hydrogen suffused water and all of these other ways that hydration can support our immunity. But what I think is really interesting is that there was recently a collaborative analysis that was conducted by Harvard and a couple of other universities. I forget, UCLA maybe? Regardless, basically what they found was that the single unifying factor in determining overall symptom severity and overall likelihood of mortality for the pandemic was hydration levels. And they recommended as a primary preventative measure and a treatment measure, even more so than anything else, what we should have been implementing from the start was hydration screenings and hydration treatment protocols for people. And that's coming directly from a Harvard collaborative analysis. Now, of course, more research needs to be done, but I think that the facts are pretty clear. And if you study hydration and hydrobiophysics in any way, that doesn't really come as a surprise. But again, most people think that getting hydrated means drinking more water, and that's why all of us are dehydrated.
Okay, we're going to go into it now. You mentioned these different ways. We have the water that dehydrates you and causes disease. We have water that quenches thirst. We have water that gives you that proper hydration, that prana, that life force, that vitality that enhances longevity. Before we go, is it possible to take from now on, I wanted to do this at the beginning episode, but let's refer to tap water as tap liquid, as you so appropriately coined the term.
I can't take credit for that. I think that originally came from Daniel Vitalis, probably, I don't know, 15 years ago or something like that.
Okay. Well, thanks, Daniel. Tap liquid. It's like, for example, I live in a part of Sydney, Australia, where we have a dam which supplies 80% of the city. But actually, unfortunately, where I am, I get desalinated water. So my water's coming from the oceans, desalinated. They're pumping various chemicals, which are known neurotoxins and known carcinogens. And then I get this thing out of my tap called tap liquid. With all the fancy equipment, like what you use in your morning routine, the best electrolyzer, the best filter, and then charging it with my love and everything. Like, I'm just wondering, and because I, on the other end of the spectrum of tap liquid, I see spring water as the best water. So how much can we kind of rectify that tap liquid? Is it going to be, of course, it's going to make a huge difference, but in the long run, is it sustainable as a species to just forget about springs and use, and we're in a time where the world is going to shit and well, I just need to do as much as I can with the tap liquid I have, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I think that that comes back to what we were talking about in the beginning about the reciprocity, which is, of course, we have to do what we have with where we are, or do what we can with where we are and what we have to begin with. And we need to make the best out of whatever water situation we're in. And there are a lot of ways that we can restore nearly spring quality vivacity back to water, which is not only a service to our own bodies and the bodies of our family, but it's also a service to the watershed and all other water that that water is going to come back into contact with when we pee it out or pour it down the sink or anything like that. Then the other aspect, which is this reciprocity, is how can we be serving water? How can we be serving our watershed? How can we ensure that our local municipality is not selling water contracts to private corporations or, you know, Suez, Veolia, Bechtel, RWE, Thames, all of these, you know, global water cartel companies that basically lower the water quality, that pump in a ton of chemicals and all of this stuff. You know, we have to start getting involved on a really local level with how can we serve the water that is outside of us, in addition to just serving the water that's going to go inside our own bodies. You know, once we have that taken care of, like, let me get my kitchen set up so that I know that what my family is drinking, it's going to become their blood within 5 minutes. I want them to have the highest quality, most living, vivacious blood that's going to help them to be present and conscious and vivacious. But once I have that set up, then my responsibility is to the waters around me as well, is to my watershed, because the water in my body is going right back into my watershed again. And that's really the service that we have to transition to. Outside of commodifying water, it is recognizing that there's no difference between the water inside of us and the water outside of us. What we do to water, we do to ourselves. There's no difference. So we really have to serve water, because when we start serving water, when we start turning away from these greenwashed solutions like desalinization, which actually pumps a liter of toxic poison back into the ocean for every liter of quote unquote clean water that it produces, or these greenwashed solutions like water-based nanotechnology, which is horrific, horrific, or quote unquote green solutions like hydropower dams, for example, which are horrific for the local ecosystem. When we start turning away from those and start mimicking nature instead, then we start to see balance begin to restore, not only in the ecosystem, but also in the climate as a whole, because we can actually trace climate change directly back to depletion of the hydrological cycles. That's not going to happen if we don't feel some sense of devotion, reciprocity, and connection with our local watersheds. So yeah, we have to take care of our drinking water, but that can't be our only focus. We have to take care of water as a whole as well. And that's the responsibility of each one of us, because we are not protecting water by doing so. We are water protecting herself. And she needs us. Life needs us right now. On this planet where we have this death cult mentality where everything is dying off, and the only way to shift away from that is to serve life and uplift life. And what is life? Water is the body of life. Water gives life. Water is the source of life. We have to serve water.
And just, I think I mentioned on the last episode we did, but getting to know the watersheds, what you refer to watersheds, or what we in Australia we call water bodies. Just know, where are they? What are your local ones? Especially if you're in the city, you don't know. Like, how many people actually know in a city where their water comes from? And you know about it more in the land. If you're living in the rural areas, like, okay, we have this creek over here, we have this lake there, we have this dam, which we've linked to the, just understanding what's around you and locally, it's a great place to start. Mm-hmm. And seeing the plan. I know it's such a massive topic on ways we can optimize. We've talked about reciprocity and that greater inclusive perspective of enhancing the water in your life, thus enhancing your health and your hydration, reciprocity, getting to know, taking care of the water bodies and sheds. I know there's just so many, and we're not going to go into many, because that's what like Lizabelle has designed courses. And what I love about the way that you deliver is there's so many, as I said earlier, there's so many ways you can do it yourself, get some simple home ingredients and add it to your water, do some certain movements to your water, get these devices, which at first seem extremely expensive, but because watch this water, I'm used to this for free, but actually this is, as we've explored, it's so crucial. It's the blood of you and your family. So maybe we can just go through, I don't know, three ways that just three out of the many we can just choose. No particular, not that it's your favorite or something, but I don't know, whatever comes to mind of how people can start to, along with movement and appreciation, gratitude, offering. Now let's get to, I guess, physical. What can people do to enhance their water and hydration?
Absolutely. So like I mentioned earlier, I basically recommend about a 6-step process, and that is filter, structure, balance, bless, and free, and lifestyle. And I have tools for each one of these on my shop, which is waterislife.shop. And there are some tools which will do several of these steps for you. There are some tools that will only do one. Like you mentioned, you can start very cheap, very DIY. A lot of them you can do for free, but they're not going to be very effective. You get what you pay for with it. There are some tools that will do pretty much all of them for you. So basically, as an overview, filtration, we all kind of know a little bit about filtration. Either you get a filter or your body becomes the filter. Most of the filters that people use are really domesticating their water and making their water kind of chaotic and disconnected. So you want to invest in a high quality filter that's not going to degrade the quality of the water. And then structure. So that's bringing molecular coherence to the water. So when we think of water structure, it's basically like the difference between if you think of coal or a diamond, right? Technically, they're both just carbon, but it's a different allotrope. It's a different phase because of the structure of the carbon. If the carbon is very chaotic, then you're going to have coal. But if the carbon has been condensed through pressure over time into a beautiful crystalline lattice, a matrix of carbon, then you're going to have a diamond. Well, we can do the same thing with water molecules. And rather than pressure, there are actually a lot of different ways to create structured water. You can do that through movement, which would specifically be either vortexing movements or putting the water through a flow form, which is typically my favorite way, because most of the vortex, actually all the vortexes that I know of that are on the market, only spin the water in one direction, which is great. Like, you're going to aerate the water, you're going to structure it. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's a great first step. It's really accessible. But also with flow forms, you get water flowing in both directions within the flow form. You also get great aeration with flow forms. So structure, you can also do that through things like near infrared light or through coherent frequencies. There are a lot of different ways. So filter, structure, and then balance means bringing together or bringing into balance a lot of the different factors that water would have in nature. I mean, really, all of these steps are just based on what nature does. So we're just trying to mimic what would happen to water in the hydrological cycle and mimic what happens to water when she's rising to a spring. So the different layers of rock strata in the hydrological cycle will filter the water. And then because water is brought up in these spiraling vortexing patterns and tumbles over rocks along the way and is exposed to the magnetic influences of various geomagnetic rock formations, all of that will structure the water. And then with the balance step, we're talking about balancing the electrolyte ratios and the mineral profile of water. And of course, you know, the water will get that from the earth and from soil. And so we want to restore the electrolyte ratio to our water as well. Electrolytes are hugely important. Also the aeration, so the various levels of dissolved gases in the water, because again, spring water will breathe as she moves. She will intake oxygen so we can get dissolved oxygen for our water. One of my favorite ways is dissolved molecular hydrogen in the water. And, you know, basically the more hydrogen is in your water, the more hydrating it is. Dr. Albert Sangiorgi, who was a Nobel Prize winner, he said, hydrogen is the fuel of life. And so there have been about 1,600, so almost 2,000 studies that have been done on molecular hydrogen dissolved in water. So So dissolved gases would be the aeration and the breathing. And then the other aspect of balance would be microbial balance. So another thing in spring water that you find is a really balanced microbiome. So natural water is actually a probiotic and will actually bring a diversity of gut microflora and microbiota into our digestive tract, which is massively important for our mood, our cognitive function, everything. So microbial balance, electrolytes, and aeration fall under the balance step. Filter structure balance, bless, is the next step, and that is just energizing the water. So water that is in a formation can store information. So we've brought the water into a formation when we structured it. Now we're bringing it information when we energize it. So that's basically just patterning the water with different vibrational frequencies, stimuli, information, because water is the sensory organ of the universe. So the ancients used to call it das sensible chaos, which is like, you know, she's constantly feeling and perceiving and recording and remembering. She is the way that consciousness itself is seeing and hearing and smelling and thinking and feeling and remembering and tasting. When you taste water, water is tasting you. When you look at water, water is looking at you. She's perceiving everything. We could go deeper into the science of how that is, but maybe on another episode. But for now, just know that whatever you expose water to, she's going to carry an imprint of that. She's going to carry a memory of that. And so you want to expose her to vibrational energetic stimuli. That's that step. And then free, we already talked about that. Free is basically giving back to water, sharing water freely with your community, you know, being a servant and a steward and a student of water in these different ways, giving offerings, giving gratitude, making sure that there's this flow that's happening, that the water is not just commodified and held stagnant, because that's against the laws of nature. And then the lifestyle factors. And a lot of those we've already talked about, like movement, for example. Moving is a massive part. We've talked a little bit about EMF exposure, but you really want to mitigate your EMF exposure. You know, your body actually can't absorb hydration in the presence of strong man-made electromagnetic fields. And so it really doesn't matter if you're drinking even the highest quality water. If you're doing that standing right next to a 5G signal, your body isn't going to absorb it that well. So that's a big lifestyle factor. Diet is a big lifestyle factor. Yeah, there are different considerations like that. And that's it. Those are the steps. Like I said, like you mentioned, I have courses that go deeper into them, but I also have the shop, which will give you a lot of information and a lot of tools for each of them as well.
Yeah, it's really helpful. And I just want to give people action for kind of spring water, which is would you agree that it's kind of like the most ideal? And if you can't get that, then you do all these things to deal with the water, which we have, which of course is going to happen because your house is not going to be run on spring water unless you're living next to a spring and you're bathing there and cooking with that and everything, which you're very lucky. So for spring water, you can find your own spring by, is it findaspring.com or
findaspring.com? Yep.
.com. So you can find one near you.
Also, for anyone who checks that website and doesn't find anything, that doesn't mean that there's not a spring near you. You can also go to Gaia GPS.
Yes.
You can also check I know in the United States, it's called the U.S. Geological Survey. In other countries, it might go by another name, but there's going to be some kind of geological survey in your area. And you can also ask your elders, ask the people of previous generations, because we're only one of the first generations that has stopped harvesting water from springs and making our bodies of the water where we live, the water where we're from. We make our body water from Fiji and the Alps and Evian, France, and all these other places. But our elders made their body waters from the place where they live. And so they still remember and they still hold those codes. So check in with them if you can't find something on Find a Spring.
Love it. And yeah, harvest your own, because as we said, that enhances that reciprocal relationship and is so fun and empowering and liberating and and then of course you can get it delivered if not from a sustainable ethical company. You know, I do that. I don't go 1.5 hours to the closest spring that I know every week. I get it delivered and go there occasionally. So
even if you can go once a month, you know, it's like taking a pilgrimage. It really is like going to the absolute source, and you know, it's worth the trek. You can fill up enough 5-gallon carboys to last you all month if you go once a month. But even if you don't fill up anything, even just for the communion that takes place when you go to the point where life is being born from the belly of the earth, and this bloodstream of our mother is emerging for the first time in hundreds, sometimes thousands of years, it's the most pristine, pure, beautiful, sacred thing we will ever personally come into contact with. You know, people go to church every week to get a taste of holy water, and it's like, man, we can go straight to the source for that.
Yeah, because that water is from the depths of the earth. Can you go more into that, how it's never seen, it's been exposed to above earth for so long?
Yeah, well, it really depends on which spring and the depth of the aquifer, but a lot of spring water has actually been under the earth since before the Industrial Revolution. This water is the most pristine thing we will ever come into contact with. She's been gestating in the womb of our mother for hundreds and sometimes thousands of years in this beautiful chrysalis. And when it emerges from the earth, when I say that it's a communion, I don't just mean that in some, you know, symbolic woo-woo kind of way. It's there are literal physiological changes that happen to the human body when we go to a spring. It's much higher in negative ions in those areas. When you breathe in negative ions, studies have shown that you go into these alpha brainwave patterns, so it automatically puts you in a greater state of presence and peace and awareness and brainwave synchronization and balance. And also there's more ormus in the air at those places, especially in the higher springs, especially if you can get to a mountain spring. There's a lot more ormus in those areas. Ormus are, it stands for orbitally rearranged monatomic elements. And basically there are these mono and diatomic elements that are in such high spin states that they are basically spinning as light itself. And so you have all of these like light particles, these ormus elements that you can breathe in, that you can drink in, that you can just be in the presence of, and they're enormously healing. There are a lot of researchers who say that ormus might actually be what the ancient alchemists were referring to when they spoke about the philosopher's stone. And these are all present at springs, and there are countless indigenous cultures. I mean, I've studied with wisdom keepers in a lot of different cultures around the world. I'm a semi-nomadic, and so I've had the great honor and privilege of learning from a lot of different kinds of people. And one of the most consistent themes that I see over and over again is this belief that springs are actually portals to other worlds, and that the very place where water emerges from the ground, that in itself is a doorway to another dimension. A lot of indigenous coming of age initiations will involve springs, diving into springs and that sort of thing. And I've had personal experiences of this in my own practices in a couple different countries, actually, where, you know, I'm like, okay, I get it mentally. Sure, like a spring is a portal to another world, whatever, it kind of makes sense, sure. But then I had an experience of it, and whew, they're not kidding. They are not kidding. You know, I spoke to a Balinese priest as well, who said that, oh yeah, you know, there was this priest who was tending to this one spring. It wasn't even one of the major springs. It was just, you know, there's springs all over Bali and there's temples at every spring. And he was like, oh yeah, you know, the priest who was here, he had a family in this world and he had a family in the other world, and the whole town knew it, and he would use the spring to get to the family in the other world. And they really are sacred places. They really are immensely sacred places. So I recommend going there and meditating and doing your ceremony and doing your offerings and doing your prayers there, because water really is this medium of communication between the human and the heavenly. It really is a mediator between the manifest and the unmanifest worlds. And nowhere is that clearer or more fully expressed than at a spring. The water that comes from that spring is very different, very different from the water that most people are familiar with. You know, if you're accustomed to water coming out of the tap, or you're accustomed to water from a bottle, I'm sorry, but you haven't met water yet. You need to go meet water.
Yes, love it. All right, so if you go to our website, you go to vitalveda.com.au, click about Friends of Vital Veda, and you'll see a link to Isabel's courses, wonderful courses. There's so many things you can learn. She's on Telegram. You can follow her on Water is Life. Is that the best? You just type that in, or how do they do that?
I think on Telegram, it's actually Life is Water, t.me/Life is Water. I'm not super active on there. The best way would be on Instagram, which is just my name, Jen Isabel Friend. My website is waterislife.love. My shop is waterislife.shop. My courses are all at waterislife.teachable.com. I also offer one-on-one hydration consultations to help you craft your individual approach to hydration based on your needs, your location, your budget. We craft a strategy for you. That's all on waterislife.teachable.com. And all of the courses that are on there, all the courses and webinars, every listener of the Vital Veda podcast gets 10% off. So if you use the coupon code Vital Veda, then you'll get a discount for it.
Awesome. I think Vital Veda, one word maybe, right?
Mm-hmm. All one word.
Good. Beautiful. Thanks so much, Isabel. I'm going to go to a spring tomorrow, which I haven't been for months. I'm actually going because I'm going to the mountains. And yeah, I hope everyone listening can do something like that. And yeah, that's everything. I think we've done a pretty good wrap up.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much, Dylan. This has been really fun.
Thank you. See what I mean by she's a water goddess? She is Appa Devi, we call in the Vedas, that divine feminine of water, because water is divine feminine. It's feminine, it moves, it flows, it's an expression from that field of the unmanifest, and that unmanifest may be the spring or the depths of the earths, that masculine. So make sure you check out the previous episode, episode 42, The Magic, Mystery, and Science of Water, we did with Isabel. We speak actually more about that divine, about feminine and masculine, how they're interplaying and interwoven into the water molecules. She just goes on and on and on. There's just so much you can speak. Check out the show notes associated with this podcast. You can find the resources of things that Isabel mentioned, as with all episodes. And if you appreciate this, please share it. Share it on Instagram. You can tag Isabel Friend, Jen Isabel, as well as Vital Veda, and get people accessing this fundamental aspect of their health. People trying to be healthy, and which is fantastic, and we need to, but we need to get this absolutely basic quality right with water. So check out also on Vital Veda website, we have the, on Friends of Vital Veda, we have the most valued water purifying, filtering, restructuring, and blessed system that we know from Dr. Mark Cohen. And Isabel is also collaborated with Dr. Mark. It's a highly great water system of beautiful water. So you can check that out on the Friends of Vital Veda website. And in there as well, on Friends of Vital Veda webpage, you'll find all of Isabel's wonderful courses on how to navigate water. And remember, discount code Vital Veda, one word. All right, until next time, see you, and much love.